Please note, this episode references IVF treatment and trauma. Please see the show notes for helpful links.
Hi, I'm Lisa Kennedy, and you're listening to The Bra and the Brave. This podcast celebrates the creative and the courageous. I am fascinated by those who are talented, forward-thinking, and inquisitive. Sharing their stories, wisdom, and everything in between, The Bra and the Brave is about people and their passions. So on to today's episode.
Angela McCallum,
hello.
Scottish vocal coach. Thank you for being on The Bra and the Brave.
Hello. It's amazing to be here. I'm apprehensive and excited at the same time.
Listen,
so
5 minutes in, you'll forget that this microphone's here, and yeah. The thing about the podcast is, like, for me, it's just about the person in the moment. Like, yeah. This is a conversation. I always treat it like, you know, if no one was listening, I'd still want to do this conversation. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's not about who's listening. I mean, it's lovely that you're listening. Thanks very much if you are. But yeah, it's just a chance for me to get to know somebody better. And I think working in the industry that I work in, I'm very lucky to meet a lot of interesting people. But the podcast has even opened that world so much wider for me. And how we've met is that, you know, through the channels,
story, and
yeah, and then I saw your page, and I was like, this person looks amazing at what they do. And then you reached out to me going, I've never done a podcast.
Yeah,
so now you're here.
I know,
love it.
Brilliant. I know. Yeah, just so many people have been, I've been on a podcast, yes. And I'm quite a curious person.
Mm-hmm. Great.
So I'm always wanting to kind of stretch myself, you know, put myself into a situation where I feel a wee bit like excited but curious and a wee bit under pressure as well. So
have you always been like that? Is that from childhood? You've always been that wee curious kid?
I've always been quite a questioner, kind of want to find out, always from a positive perspective, not from a fear perspective.
Nice.
You know, sometimes I can get me into trouble because if there's something hot, I'll go, oh, what's that over there, let's touch that, and mom would be like, it's gonna burn you, you know. But I would always come away and go, oh, why is it burnt, oh, why does it feel like that, you know, and mom would be like, because it's hot, you know. And I was like, well, is it still hot? It's hot.
Okay. For more.
Yeah. So the learning aspect after might be a bit slow with the brain, but I'm always quite a curious person.
You're literally a hands-on kind of person.
But, oh, gosh,
in terms of your learning, in terms of your, like, understanding the world around you.
Yeah, very much so. I'm actually, because even in what I do, it's so hands-on. Every voice is different, every jaw is different, every body's different, every breathing pattern's different, you know, and that's really exciting, actually, you know.
Yeah, every day's a different...
Every hour is different, you know.
So I'm interested in how you got into that world, because, obviously, you know, there's a million singers in the world, but it's not everybody, but it's a vocal coach, so did you start off life just enjoying music? Was music in your house? Was music in your life as a young person?
Massively.
Okay.
Like, crazy. So my mum's a singer. My dad was a conductor. You know, he led choirs. My mum sang in choirs. My papa actually played honky-tonk piano through the war. I kind of remember sitting on his lap, like, bouncing up and down to, like, Joplin and, you know, and all this kind of music. So I kind of learned from a very young age. And I think I started piano when I was about four, but mom said I came out the womb singing. So she was like, oh, this one might be a singer. Because my sister came out very quiet. She said no sound. She was very quiet.
Is your sister still silent?
It's just chalk and cheese.
Is that right?
Yeah, total chalk and cheese. Yeah.
Don't get too the same.
Never.
Like every voice, yeah. I guess.
But she went quite musical as well.
Okay.
So she went to kind of French horn land. So she did French horn.
Okay.
And so I did piano. Then I did violin. Mm-hmm. And I did singing. I did poetry quite a lot as well growing up.
Yeah.
And
you grew up where were you?
So I grew up in Kilbarkin.
Right.
Tiny wee village.
Yep.
Not Kilbarchan, not Kilburnie, not Kilwinnoch. Kilbarkin. Hey, it's not even on the map.
Blinking.
My big smoke was Johnston.
Is it all? Right, that was a big
but it became Glasgow.
Wow.
At the age of seven and a half, I auditioned for the Royal Scottish Academy of Music and Drama, the juniors.
Okay.
And I got into the classical music side of it and did that. I got a scholarship every year and I did that for 10 years.
Gosh.
So, yeah, I think kind of by the age of kind of 15, 16, I'd done all my exams in piano, violin and voice.
Wow. Yeah. Isn't it your parents were... Obviously, that's a massive commitment to be doing three disciplines like that and for so long. Like,
yeah,
they're obviously committed to
following
your passion.
So it was really different when, I don't know about you, but it was dead different when I was growing up. So, like, I didn't really have a social life at all.
You did your...
I did
your hobbies.
I did my hobbies. Mm-hmm. I did my music. I did my dance.
Yeah.
I did my acting. Great. Dorothy Paul was my acting coach.
What?
I know.
What?
What? Smoking.
Wow.
So I used to have one-to-one lessons with Dorothy.
My God.
I know. Occasionally, Lane C. Smith would pop in
yes.
and take over the class if Dorothy was away or she was away on course or anything.
That must have been...
You know, what else did I have? A gymnastics class, trumpet. I picked up the trumpet as well. I had loads of different. I went to. Dorothy said that I had a stutter.
Okay.
So I had a stutter when I was younger as well, which I learned from my best mate. I wasn't born with it. I picked it up from my best friend.
Gosh.
Copied her. Yeah.
Wow.
So I copied her and started talking like her and learned this stutter. And so. Dot sent me to a kind of speech therapist who did lots and lots of different kind of acting training and tongue relaxation exercises and all that. And I suppose that's where the kind of voice excitement came from, I think.
Understanding the mechanics of it, I guess.
Because I used to love my sessions with Dorothy and always came out like quite energised and really quite... Actually, physically energised with the embouchure area. I remember being like, I feel really, really, really awake up to here. You know, I don't know. It was just weird. Mum would come in and go, you're talking weird in the car. And I was like, I know. You know, because we'd done accents and fun exercises and stuff. And then it was the same with the speech therapist as well. So we did lots of work with that. So that, I think,
so that's where it kind of
maybe started, but I didn't realise.
Okay, okay.
You know, because I did kind of a lot of singing competitions.
Yes.
Burns competition.
Oh, I remember them well.
Yep.
I was there and all.
Yep. I did win the Burns competition for the under 10s, the under 14s and the under 16s. Like, I think 4 or 5 years in a row I did it.
Amazing.
So we did poetry, we did songs, we did duets, my sister and I. We did, like, the Glasgow Music Festival, the Inverclyde. Well, back then it was the Greenock Music Festival and the Gourock Music Festival. Now it's the Inverclyde Music Festival that I put my students into now.
Yeah.
So we did lots of festivals. We did lots of shows, TV, City Lights.
Gosh.
Radio.
So definitely we're going down a performance route.
Absolutely.
That's where you felt most.
My mum and dad are very classically trained.
Mm-hmm.
So they're classical. I'm a bit more eclectic.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a bit of everything. So
yeah.
Mum didn't really know what to do with me. She was just like, just putting on a show every night up the stairs. What do
See,
we
I
do?
I would have been your pal if I'd known you then. That was exactly the same. I'm sure Mum and Dad were like, oh, great, another show, brilliant.
Yeah. Used to make tickets out.
Oh, right.
We'd have a big basket full of costumes.
Yeah.
You know, there'd be a play, there'd be a set.
It's just like so normal.
Uh-huh.
And then you would have pals that just wasn't the done. So sometimes you'd be like, all right, this isn't what everybody does.
Right, okay. They'd be outside playing curbsy.
Aye.
Yeah, and I started doing Pace. Well, back then it was Paisley Youth Theatre.
Mm-hmm.
Did that for quite a few years as well. And then... Just with, I think with school and with time and dedication to the instruments, I kind of stopped doing the Pace.
Mm-hmm.
I took 2 years away from the classical side and did the drama course at the academy.
Wow.
But I just felt like it didn't push me enough. It wasn't challenging me enough, but that was back It was a long time ago. You're talking like 1990.
Okay.
You know,
okay.
so from, I'm 43 now. Yeah. So it was quite a while ago.
Mm-hmm.
And like they didn't have as an interactive course as they have now, maybe.
Got you. Yeah.
You know, so.
So did you do the vocal coaching through the conservatoire? Is that how you ended up becoming
no,
a vocal
so,
coach?
No, the vocal, they don't do a vocal coaching course. No, they don't. No.
Okay.
They do a singing course.
Yes, uh-huh.
But no, so I actually did the Bachelor of Education degree in secondary music teaching. Mom and dad were like, you need a teaching degree, you've got to get that. Yep. You can't do anything that's like performing based, that's not going to bring any money in, you know. Yeah, so it was just that, and then I kind of came out of that and went, I don't really want to do that.
And were you still performing as like a young adult? Were you
no,
so you
not really
at that point?
No, I'd kind of I wasn't kind of doing that, and I kind of found my way to kind of wondering about, well, what could I do music? I did about 8 or 9 years as a child performer in the King's mm-hmm. pantos
yeah.
and things like that, and different shows, and
what an experience that must have been.
It was wonderful. It was great.
All the greats at that time as well. Like,
who was it? Rona Ferguson.
Right, yes, that name does ring a bell. Yeah, totally.
She was the choreographer.
Wow.
Yeah, it was great because we had like Stanley Baxter, Ricky Fulton, Walter Carr, Janet Kelly, Eric Cullen, all these kind of, Elaine C. Smith, all these just amazing people to learn from. And I mean, they used to call us wee shites. Because we were the kids, like, and we were like, I'll get them down. Out of our dressing room, you know, because we'd be like, hello, can I have your... No, okay. Wait, try and get an autograph and a picture.
I've been with Dorothy Paul, don't you know?
But
gosh,
it was good.
But,
yeah, my mum had to. I had so much energy. I think
nice
she just had to.
Into stuff like, you
she was trying, she was trying to tire me out.
Well, like we used to say, we just like used to chuck instruments into my sister's bedroom. She'd come out playing them.
Yeah.
Do you mean just
yeah.
like having a go? And I think that's so important, like just to have a go. And like, you're not going to be excellent necessarily at everything, but like if you've got the opportunity there, and obviously it sounds like your mum and dad were just like that, just mm-hmm. trying to like expel your energy in some sort of creative, productive way.
Yeah.
But to fast forward to now and like what you're doing now professionally, do you know what I mean? That
yeah.
it's amazing, like all of that training, all of that
Absolutely.
Experience will have led you to where you are just now, and it'll help you in terms of like teaching, because I think the experience of being on stage, being backstage, you impart that wisdom into people
you
that
do.
Are performing, you know what I mean, even if you're not performing now, like it's still, it's important, you know, to have that kind of background and understanding of the world that these people are working in.
I know, yeah,
it really is, it's phenomenal. So the so how long have you essentially been a vocal coach for? How long is that career?
So I started teaching. My very first lesson that I taught was piano and singing.
Mm-hmm.
I was 16.
Wow.
I taught a wee girl up the road. Mum, I came home and Mum said, you know, Mrs. such and such's mm-hmm. daughter, it's looking for a wee bit of a lesson. She'll give you £8.
Mm-hmm.
For a wee half hour lesson, a wee bit of piano, a wee bit of thinking. I'd done my grade 8 ABRSM by that point, so I was like very competent on piano,
yes.
very competent as a singer. So I was like, oh, so that's £8 in my pocket, you know. And I think as well, I'd started working in Mickey D's at that point.
Me too.
And it was £3.44.
Right. I was a
job.
I didn't even get behind the tills. I was like a cleaner for like 4 years in the Motherwell show. You take your life in your hands every weekend.
I was in the Linwood, the Linwood one. I was always in the drive-through.
Oh, were you?
They said I had a nice voice.
Well, people, you're like, I'm very consistent.
I know.
On brand.
At the least, people can understand you. Angela. I was like,
no, it's been out to you once. Well done.
It's the Kilber Chan in me. So when I started, I was like
£8.
You know, I was like, asking students now who are not even trained, they're charging £40 an hour, and I'm like, hold on, wait a minute.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But yeah. So I think I had her, and she was, I think, 6 years old. So I remember my first lesson, you know, really, really well, and I remember encouraging her, and I just felt quite comfortable with it.
Yes. It's not everybody that can teach.
No.
I remember my dad saying that to me, like when I had said, oh, I think I'm going to go in to teaching dance. Like, I'm still performing, but it was just something that I just felt kind of like I gravitated towards, like sharing what my knowledge. And I remember seeing him saying, like, do you think you can, we know you can dance, but can you teach? And I was like, well, we'll soon find out.
Yeah.
And as soon as I started, I was just like,
it was a natural.
It's a bit of me. And it is, there's so many things at play. I mean, I'm talking about this quite a lot in the podcast. Holding space for people in any way, shape or form is a privilege.
Yeah.
First and foremost, before it's like, oh, I'm amazing and I'm going to impart my wisdom on you and my knowledge. No, somebody's coming to you to ask you for your help. Like, that's amazing. You know, like, the trust that's involved in that. Yeah. I think it's so important. Like, I don't take that for granted, but it is a skill.
Yeah.
And you do build that up over time. You do. You just do. And you should be learning all the time. Like, I still learn stuff about my teaching and, you know,
all
you come
the
up
time.
With workshops or whatever. Sometimes you're just like, that's a wee one for the, you know, but I like that, the uncertainty of it. Sometimes you're just like, you don't know what you're going to get.
I know. That's
you know,
thing.
Because
you
humans are.
And it is quite exciting, that. I quite like that. I mean, don't get me wrong, there's a bit of me that does like this. I like a structure, so I do always keep a structure to a lesson. There's always a warm-up, there's always a middle section, and there's always a warm-down or a cool-down, and I regulate yourself into, okay, let's talk about what we want out of next week practice, or 2 week practice, or I'm not seeing you for a month, you've got 4 weeks, bam, 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 this is what we want to look at next session.
Yes.
So there's always a structure, but it's quite a relaxed, loose structure, because you just don't know what you're going to get. I mean, I think what we do is so personal.
Yeah. Well, for you, I think you've been one-on-ones. Like, I don't do one-on-ones. The closest I get to that is like if I work with wedding couples, which is very intimate.
Yeah.
It's usually in their home and all the rest of it. But for you, you're working one-on-one. That's hugely intimate. And I think people's own, you know, their voice. I mean, that's a personal thing.
It is. And they take it really personally. So you have to have a bond. Even in a group format, you've got to be able to reach them.
Of course.
You have to be able to reach every single one of them. I mean, when I do workshops, sometimes there's 60 in the room. You have to try and contact every single one of them. And you have to do it in a way that they all feel connected to you enough to trust you. To follow what I'm asking them to do, because sometimes my hands are on you. Sometimes their posture is important. Their breathing, their lungs, most of them are either dancers who pull in and up too much with their intrinsic muscles, you know, or they're non-dancers who don't have the posture at all. So it's
to know your body.
Yeah. So you've got, and some of them are young sometimes as well. Some of them are older, and it doesn't really matter. It's about knowing yourself and knowing kind of like, so how much can I kind of pass on to you right now without you getting too scared?
Yeah, overwhelmed or whatever, feeling exposed. It's a fine line, you know. It is. You really, like, and I think, I mean, I teach groups a lot, and it is that reading the room, and it's just reading.
It's reading face, it's reading body language.
You know, you think you know somebody, but then somebody could be coming into the space with a whole load of stuff going on, and it's trying to get them to leave the real world for a while as well, and we're just doing this, you know, and that's the joy of it. Like, we're supposed to be here enjoying ourselves. Like, we're not saving lives. Yeah, I mean, although I do think the arts saves lives, but
it does.
There's so much going on, but so mostly, are people mostly coming to you because they're, is it kind of long term, or is it like I'm working towards an audition, or I'm working towards a show, or how does, is it a bit of everything?
So right now, I do 3 days a week at the Dance School of Scotland as well.
Oh, do you?
Yeah. So I'm in like all day Monday, Tuesday and Thursdays.
Yes.
So I'm there. So I teach there group classes and one-to-ones on the dance course and on the musical theatre course.
Amazing.
So I do that up to about 4 or 5 o'clock during the day at night. And then I work from a studio at home. Mm-hmm. So I've got a wee studio pod out the back garden where I do one-to-ones, and I do that. So that there, some are regular weekly lessons or fortnightly lessons where they'll come and they've booked in every month throughout. So they're permanent students to Then I have ad hoc students on top of that. So ad hoc students are, for example, students that I've worked with previously that are in the West End or they're in New York or they're on cruises just now, but they're home and they need stamina, a wee bit of work or new rep ideas.
Nice.
So it's a lot of sight reading on the piano, which I just plonk through, to be honest. you know, I am no means the best accompanist in the world. Don't try and hire me for that. you know, that's not my passion at all. But it's working out songs. Some of them are opera singers, jazz, socks. I do songwriting with a lot of students as well. I'll do help with articulation. If we've got a vocal strain, I'll work on that too. As long as they know that they've been maybe through rehab, through the NHS, or they've seen a doctor or anyone like that, and the doctor has said, yes, you're ready to do this now.
Yeah, of course.
So I'll work on that. I can do vocal massage.
Yeah, because that's the video I saw you were working with Natalie. Because it was kind of Christmas time, and obviously that's like kind of thing with the bugs and all that flying about.
Yeah, the holding of the tension, we kind of tried to push that away. I also teach a wee bit of piano. I only have like two or three because I'm pulling back from that. I'm just so involved in the voice that I love that. I'm a proper voice geek. So like I like working out how they make the sound, where it comes from.
It's fascinating.
Kind of looking when my students come in and they're like, oh, I've got a bit of a sniffle. I'm like, still come to lesson. I'll show you how to sing round it.
Nice one.
You know, or I'll show you an exercise to clear the sinus canal, you know, things like that. Like,
I mean, you can hear my, I'm quite easily just now because I've got a bit of a sniffle, but I am a nasally person.
Yeah.
And I've just started, so I used to sing.
Okay.
And I've just started again.
Right, okay.
Like, for my own enjoyment, just, like, trying to get the voice back again and just, like, and every time I hear it back, I'm like, oh, I'm such a nasally person, but, yeah, sinuses are my issue, so I'm not forever doing...
Do you have a salt lamp?
No, I don't. And sometimes talk about this recently, and I'm like, yeah, I need to make that.
Get a wee salt lamp.
Aye, totally.
It will change your life.
Okay.
It will. Okay. It's phenomenal. Heard it here. Yes, absolutely. Scottish vocal coach.
Free tip, I know.
Free tip.
I think it's amazing that you've been able to build a career out of something that you were quite clearly passionate about from a young age, just music in general. And do you listen to music, like, when you're not working?
All the time.
Do you really?
Yeah, all the time.
What would you your go-to kind of music for listening to? Because I guess you're hearing all sorts all during the day.
Everything. I like soft rock.
Nice.
Bon Jovi, Foreigner kind of vibe.
Cool. Yeah, loving it.
I like a bit of that. I'm a huge ABBA fan. I know every harmony, every word, every song, every routine. I'll go from that. I'll do Tina. I'll do Celine Dion. I'll do Barbara Streisand. I'll do musical theatre. I'll do jazz. Nina Simone, Aretha Franklin. I love Billy Joel, you know.
Do you still sing for pleasure? Like, do you sing yourself?
I do, but I don't really perform. I'll do like a wedding or something if someone asks, if it's a friend and things like that, but not really. I don't know. I kind of became a voice coach by default. I think the plan wasn't to do that. The plan was to perform, but I've had a bit of kind of trauma through my life, and so those traumas have changed the path that I thought I was going to go down.
Yeah.
I think if you looked at my childhood, you would have predicted a West End performer.
Got you.
For the rest of my life, or like a classical pianist.
Yeah, it sounds like you know.
Like it was, and I loved it completely, and it just was my life. I didn't. Not once did I kind of feel like I wanted to change my life, you know. But I think there was quite a few twists and turns that kind of changed my life for me, if that makes sense. I kind of had maybe about 8 or 9 years of doing absolutely nothing. I was ill for quite a while.
Okay.
So I have an issue with my body called Sherman's deficiency. I came out of the academy from the B.Ed. I kind of didn't enjoy it. And I had some trauma and I came out of that course and then decided to do musical theatre.
Mm-hmm.
And so I kind of dealt with... the trauma, so to speak, to a certain extent, with counselling and trying to work my way through it. But to be honest, I think I was already pretty affected at that point. Okay. And so trying to keep going, still I am quite a resilient person. And so I did a B honours in performing arts.
Okay.
And I did that. And I thought, right, okay, so London for me. Mm-hmm. And I got ill, and I kept falling, and I had such pain when I realised I was in pain, and I was having panic attacks, and I was falling, and my knees were giving way, and I was struggling with it, and I came back up to Scotland, and I realised, right, I need to get this sorted. Mm-hmm. And my life changed completely. So for like 9 years, I lost 9 years of my life.
Jesus.
I was on multiple medications, gabapentin, diclofenac, amitriptyline.
I was on all them when I had sciatica.
Yeah, so it was ridiculous. Coproximal. Amitriptyline to make me sleep, cortisone injections into my spine, into my elbows, my wrists, my knees, my ankles.
So this is when you'd been diagnosed with this condition?
So they hadn't diagnosed me at that point.
Right.
They were trying pain management. So pain management was medication and this. And I lost like 9 years. I was out of my head. Wow. I mean, I'm not that big a person. So all those pills just floored me. I didn't work. I was on disability living allowance. Wow. I couldn't work. I had a back brace. I had a walking stick. They couldn't find what it was. They knew that I didn't have a lot of cartilage in my joints.
Okay. Yeah.
So my joints were popping out. Mm. And I was starting to get a bit of a curving in my spine. So I had a bit of kind of scoliosis vibe kind of feel. Yeah. And so I started to kind of do a bit more research myself.
So what age are you at this point? Like
20s? In my 20s.
Right.
My 20s. And I tried to keep going. I tried to do little wee projects, like a wee bit of free drama or a wee bit of free teaching or a little bit of like kind of bits and bobs here and there. But I had lots of wrist braces and I had a back brace and I was stoned for 9 years, like if not 10. It was just gone. I was gone. I put loads of weight on. I think I went from like a size 10 up to size 18. You know, I just had no motivation. Everything stopped. And it's as if
the mental health aspect of that, genuinely,
it was horrific.
I've got no idea how that feels. I mean, I can only liken it to the time that I did have sciatica, and it was a very short-lived experience. The pain was, I've never felt a pain like it, and I still to this day, I'm like, I wouldn't wish it my worst enemy.
Yeah.
And like that helplessness feeling, like this might never go away. I mean, people who live with pain, chronic pain like that, on a, you know, who live with it, my heart goes out to them because I can only imagine that's
it was terrible.
A massive chunk of your life,
especially when it happened.
Yeah, of course. All that studying and
that energy,
the fire in your belly for it.
Yeah,
it's just like it's cruel, isn't it?
It is. It wasn't good, and I went back when the Southern General was open. I went to the pain management clinic there. I was going there kind of maybe 3 times a week, and I was doing like water physio. I was trying different physios. I was trying to do like acupuncture, hot stone therapy. Yes. I tried Chinese herbal medicines.
Yeah.
I was taking like 20 Chinese yellow pills a day. They were telling me it's called wood something. They were saying, this will cure you. I'll try that.
Yeah.
And I found a wonderful psychotherapist who kind of changed and did a lot of cognitive work with my brain. And I think something changed inside me. I was wasting away. Yeah. Sorry.
No, you're fine. You're fine.
And I just... I think I just thought, I don't know, I think the fire inside me started beating again and went, no. And the resilience kicked in again.
Yeah.
And kind
it
of.
It was all lost. It was in there.
And pulled me out.
Yeah.
You know, and.
Thank goodness.
And I think I realised then, I kind of said, well, listen, I'm not going to be a performer again. You know, you like, I mean, you need insurance to go on stage. And I was just not even going to be able to pass the health and safety and aspect or anything like that at all. And I thought, well, what else can I do? And I thought, well, I've got my degree. Mm-hmm. I've got my piano.
Yeah.
I've got my own voice. I remembered when I was about 16, I taught this wee girl once.
Yeah.
And I thought, I wonder if I could do that. And I thought, I'm going to try it and see. I'm going to try and just get a few, maybe a one or two students, even just working from the house. And this point, you know, I was trying to just see if I could cope with it. And that's how it kind of started.
Amazing.
And then I thought, I wonder if I could work somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, I want to see what's out there. At this point, I was back home anyway. Mm-hmm. I'd been back home for years.
Yeah.
And I'd had my mum in my ear a lot as well, trying to just gently encourage me. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you've got all this talent. You can do what this, you know. And, you know, and I had such doubt with me, but I still had this fire, this come on, Angela, inside me. And
goodness, my God,
I know.
Well, obviously, you're somebody who is a fighter.
God, yeah. I mean, I'm a bounce backer.
Mm-hmm.
I bounce back. I mean, don't get me wrong. I mess up on a daily, if
well,
not
you
all the time.
You're a
you know, but nobody I bounce ever. Back all the time. And so I've had maybe 10 years. Mm-hmm. I don't take any medication. I still have pain, but mentally I'm stronger. And I can deal with it, and I understand coping mechanisms.
Yeah,
breathing is a massive influence for me. Breathing and mental positivity, positive affirmation, and seeing the light in every dark corner possible.
The mind's so powerful.
Yeah, it is a huge thing. I'm able to. I work 6 days a week, full time now. My Mondays and Tuesdays, I start at 8:45, I finish at 9 o'clock at night.
Wow.
I can cope.
Yeah.
My body's not giving up. My mentality is strong. You know,
that's
so
what that 20-odd-year-old woman would say.
Yeah.
You would say if you'd say you know, by the time you're whatever age, you're gonna be you would have been like that. I don't see that for myself.
Yeah.
Especially at your lowest.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You would have just been like that.
I was
that's not possible.
Yeah, I didn't want to be here. I just didn't, you know, so.
But you did that. But, you pulled yourself out.
Oh, God, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because you were determined at the time. You were trying all the different therapies and medicines. And like you obviously, like you say, you did have the fire. It was just trying to, like, keep that burning. Just, phenomenal. What a story. You bring that to everything that you do.
Yeah.
Without even realising the backstory. Do you know what I mean? That,
I know.
That kind of energy. I think you can't escape what you've been through. And you know, hindsight's a great thing, or, you know, regret and all the rest. I mean, I'm very much a person who's just like, that happened for a reason.
Yeah.
Let's take that and, like, you try and put a positive spin on it.
Yeah.
Like, well, I've learned this, so I know that'll never happen again because X, Y, and Z. And,
yeah.
Yeah. Because, well, the alternative is what? You just wallow in
it. I know. I think this world is so hard for anyone coming into this industry. It's so different, you know. So I think the resilience, if you've not got that in your teachers, then I think you're going to struggle to learn it and observe, like observation learning.
Yeah.
You know, you see it in your teachers, even if they have a bad day, they're there.
Yeah.
They're
of course.
In the room.
Yeah.
They might go, guys, I'm having a bad day, but I'm here.
Yeah.
You know, and that's okay.
You're messing up. Like, I will make a point of pointing out my messing up to people.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Well, what was I thinking?
Yeah.
Or what was that? Or I didn't mean to say that. Or I didn't mean to do that. Or that's wrong.
Yeah.
You know, and you can see sometimes I'm like, I can't believe she just. And I'm like, no, I don't get it.
We're human. Oh.
All the time. Like, by the way, and that's all right. And you're because you need to give them permission to mess up.
Yeah.
And muck up. And And it is that bounce back, like you say. It's like, well, you will sing a wrong note, you will have a terrible day where nothing's working or whatever. That's all right. Tomorrow's a new day.
Yeah.
We just move on. We move on. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, I think I'm a 1,000,000% appreciative of the fact that I actually have been able to come back. I can actually work. I can drive. I can teach singing. I can teach piano. I can walk without assistance. I can, you know, I can look after my body. I can go swimming. I can, you know, I can go out and
it's all
and
these things not, you potentially
it's stuff
take
that I thought
eat.
I would not be able to do again.
And that's the thing. Yeah. Like, I think when you have been through some sort of trauma or whatever, if there's any gift to be had, it is that.
It is a gift.
Well,
yeah.
You know, I could be in that place, but I'm here.
Yeah.
You know, and we're all guilty, I guess, of like taking things for granted. I mean, I think the best singers in the world, like some people who have just got that natural talent, and you're like, you don't know you're born with that voice.
Yeah.
So lucky, or, you know, people say that to me, like, oh, you can dance, and I'm like, I know, but everybody can dance. It's just like harnessing that.
Yeah.
Some people do it better than others, and that's fine, you know, but. Mm-hmm. And to do something you love to do, what a gift. Like, you know, I go to work every day and I'm like, but I'm pretty lucky.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I could be doing something that I hate. I could be back at McDonald's.
Yeah. Ajax. Do you remember Ajax, the cleaning stuff? Oh, that was stinking. Oh,
that's all I did was clean.
Oh,
that's
stinking.
It was at the time where you could still smoke inside. So we had those, made those wee foil ashtrays that you used to get, and they made us hand wash them.
Oh, did they?
Because they didn't bin them. oh my god, how fun! Like, do you know what I mean? Just horrendous. And then you were getting jumped every day. Oh, then why? Who's in the day? Like, oh no, you couldn't pay me to go back. Do you know what I mean? So
yeah.
I know how lucky I am because I could be still getting that job.
Yeah.
I mean?
Yeah.
But it's just finding that gratitude and every day. I mean, not to say that you're necessarily skipping to work every day. I mean, we're human, and some days it's harder than others.
To be
working
honest, for yourself, I'm still skipping. I actually do. I mean, I'm pretty, pretty kind of buzzing when I wake up in the morning.
That's
you know,
too.
I am. It's just amazing the people that or the sounds I get to work with.
Okay.
You know, I just think. You know, sometimes I sit by the piano, I go, how cool is this? And they just look at me, the students just look at me sometimes and they go, you're just mad. And I'm like, yes, but we're all mad here. I'll say that quite a bit.
That sharing, like, collective, you know, like, I know it from dance and, like, just even recently, like, singing and, like, I end up singing, like, just kind of jamming and stuff and you're just, like, the joy of making a sound together, making movement together. It doesn't necessarily need to go anywhere. It doesn't need to be for anything other than just the enjoyment of doing it.
I know.
And it's more people need that. And I think I'm quite lucky because working in the arts as well, like even seeing theatre, like today I was in the Theatre Royal and, you know, we took young people out to see dance and I'm like, I take this for granted sometimes. Like, this is amazing.
Yeah.
You know, like we're in this beautiful theatre and we're seeing people moving and enjoying themselves and the lights and And I just wish that more for people, whether it's art or dance or drama or poetry, whatever it is, like just the power of it, you know, it can save lives.
Yeah. I still played a lot.
Yeah,
I still played the piano a lot when I was unwell. I still sat and played and I sat and sang and you know I got the violin back out real. But I think it was more therapeutic than kind of anything else for me, you know. And I think we're missing a huge moment there in our education in the UK. You know, we don't use the arts anywhere near as much as Europe does. And you know, I got the opportunity to work over in Italy for a wee while, and just seeing how they interact with like maths, doing singing, you know, and different things like that. And you're just like, oh,
well, everybody learns differently. I think that's the issue sometimes with the education system. And I understand, like, you know, to do an overhaul in the education system would take energy that I can't even imagine. But and I'm encouraged, you know, as somebody who gets to go into schools and work quite often, like I'm encouraged, obviously, like there are head teachers out there, there are teachers who are you know, embracing that.
I think they're trying their best, but
they are
up against
100%
a lot of red tape, a lot of penny pinching.
I mean, I know it because I worked on a NHS programme in schools that was drama and dance based.
Yeah.
The kids loved it. It was one of these things like, oh, we're getting to do Max in the Middle. You know, everybody was always excited for it. And it went for years. And then just before COVID, it wasn't actually anything to do with COVID, but it was just before it, the money got pulled, you know, and I'm like, that was, you actually did see proper light bulb moments, changing behaviour, all that, you know, just the wee souls that just need that confidence booster. And it was a real mix of, like, you know, health and well-being. So there was, they made food on a Tuesday, they served it to each other, like, they did drama on a Wednesday, like, it was all sorts in this 1 week. And you really did feel like you were making a difference.
Yeah.
You know, it was such a privilege to do it. And then the money got pulled, you know. And I mean, I don't know if there's an equivalent now. I mean, that was a good few years ago now, but the power of it is not to be underestimated. Yeah. And it still can be, not always, can be seen as a side hustle, or get an education, but do the dancing and say, I'm like, that's fine. Like, not everybody needs to be a dancer or a singer. Like, we do need the electricians and lawyers. Yeah. Like, we do need all these people
need them too.
Do you know what I mean? Like, but if that's what your thing is and that's your passion, that's what you want to do, you should be able to
doing
do
it.
That.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter where you're from and what you look like.
And
that's still an issue.
Yeah.
And in terms of diversity in the arts as well, like, we've a lot of work still to do with that. But everything you've been through up to now, I guess, are you at a point in your career where you feel that contentment of, like, you know, I'm doing exactly what I want to do, like, this is the right thing, this is where I should be?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of came into vocal coaching thinking, well, if I can't perform, then this will do. And actually, it's what I was born to do.
Totally.
It's what I was born to do. And I don't really feel like I'm that clever, but I feel like, see, when I'm in a room,
I think you might be very clever, actually.
No, I think when I'm with a voice, I know what to do, and when I'm with a student, I know how to get them to learn what I want them to learn to do with the sound.
Yeah.
You know, whether it's, you know, sometimes it's a pulled chest sound and it's through the nasal, you know, and, you know, you need to pull it down. Whether it's an issue with attention in the tongue, I can hear it, I can see it.
Yeah.
I think I've done so much work with voices. I feel like I literally worked everywhere in Scotland that would take me.
Yeah.
Like any music school, theatre school, one-to-ones, I would take on as many and as any as you want. I had my own school for a while, McCallum School of Music. Had that up until COVID.
Okay,
And I stopped kind of doing, I closed the studio because I didn't have a life. And I'd found a man that would allow me to be my cuckoo crazy self.
Yes!
And wanted me to just spend more time with him, would you believe?
There you go.
I know. Who I went to secondary school with.
Did you?
I know. So we kind of came.
Wow. Just shows you.
I know. Do you know, I actually, so I didn't get very many Valentine's cards right in secondary school, but I kept.
I didn't get any.
I kept mine, right?
Okay.
And I got a Guess Who one from my husband.
No.
Who is in second year at school.
Why did he not? He knew Guess Who. Come on now.
I know. He was a very shy. He was very funny. He was very funny. We used to sit next to each other in history and he would make me laugh. He was such a nice boy.
So cute.
And I didn't even think it was from him. I didn't know who it was from. I actually thought it was from my dad. We've been together. We got married in 2019.
Did
yeah,
you?
Yeah. Just before COVID, we got the wedding in. Yes, because it went into lockdown in March.
Aye, totally.
So we were very lucky.
That he's
I know again.
Cool.
Yeah, amazing. But he kind of was. At that point, I think I was working 7 days a week, running my own school, teaching. You forget, and he kind of. I think COVID really changed my outlook. I think COVID made me go. Okay, it's time for me to spread my personal wings. As much as I want to do what I'm doing, with students in group classes. I mean, the music school, we had music theory classes, we had guitar classes, piano, we had musical theatre school, dancing, acting. You know, I had other teachers in as well, so I just felt really pulled everywhere.
Yeah, I mean, the admin side of running something like that is terrible.
Yes, yeah. And our studio, our actual studio, was horrific. Like, our building wasn't good, and you know, so it wasn't stressful.
I know, that's the thing. Yeah. Like, you can't pour from an empty cup, you know.
Yeah.
And there's times where you're just like, I just need to get the work done. I just need to say yes to the work, and you know, paying the bills and all the rest of it. I mean, being there, done it, doing it, still doing it.
Yeah.
You know, last year was like that for me. I had just like 3 days off. Wow. And went to Liverpool. Like, that was the extent of my break last year.
Yeah.
And but that worked for me last year. That was correct for me last year. Whereas this year, already I'm like, I'm carving out the time for myself, because I'm more than just a choreographer and a dancer.
Exactly.
Like, and you need to remember that sometimes. And if you've not, I feel like sometimes you've not got a life, what are you then imparting to your students? Like, they're coming in and all you talk about is work, all you think about is work, and I love my work, but if you want to curate a life, it needs to be more than work.
Well, I kind of felt like I wanted, I don't know how to say this without sounding crazy, but I kind of felt like I wanted to push myself more than my students.
Okay, I wanted
to...
You should want that for yourself.
I wanted to work with different, more diverse voices rather than just like up to the age of 16. I wanted to work with professionals. I wanted to work with adults. I wanted to work with... you know, anyone who was dealing with vocal issues. I wanted to do some more training myself. I went and did, over COVID and before COVID and after COVID, I've gone and done different courses and training, and I actually feel like I'm now doing my 20s.
Great.
Does that make sense? I feel like I'm taking my time back. You know, I feel like I really lost myself in my 20s completely.
You deserve that,
100%. The illness was one thing. I actually had quite a few other things happening as well that were horrific in my life. And so I think those 10 years, I closed the window. I closed the curtains. I just didn't want to. I couldn't process it. I couldn't find a counsellor that was helping me to go deep enough.
That thing as well, it's like, it's finding the right person for you, and that does take a lot of work, doesn't it? You know, we've spoken about counselling a lot on this podcast, and it's not a one-size-fits-all kind of thing. It's quite specific
to the
person and the issues. And it's whether you can access that. I mean, there's obviously issues with that, people accessing the right help.
It's hard.
In terms of whether you can
afford it as well. It's, you know, and the ones that, and I mean, I feel like the ones that I have, that have been able to help me, they weren't through NHS, they weren't free. Even that, it was a crazy amount of money. You know, I still go to counselling now.
Yeah,
I love it.
Everybody should have access to it.
Exactly.
Regardless of whether you think you need it in inverted commas. You get it if you're in a privileged position, or if you're on an NHS waiting list for a million years. And I get it, and I'm not slagging the NHS. God, we're so lucky to have it.
Yeah.
But it is oversubscribed.
They're struggling.
For access to help, and it's just awful.
I know. It's hard, you know, and obviously I think as well, quite a lot of people know me from a few of the videos I've done on the IVF process.
Yes.
And so obviously the counselling, I needed that.
Mm.
I mean, my videos, you can see the emotional spectrum. I mean, I went from horrific emotional place breakdown to being able to deal with it. So my videos do go back and kind of tell kind of my background with that. So obviously, at a very young age, I was told that it's a one in a million that I'm going to be able to fall pregnant. So I had really bad issues down there anyway. Mm. And I actually started my cycle when I was about 7.5 years old. I had had multiple surgeries and cyst removes and different things and stuff. And then I remember waking up. I was 36. I woke up. And I thought I'd been hallucinating. after the surgery. My mum's sitting by the bed and she's in tears. And I woke up and I started crying. I said, "Mum, you're never going to guess. I've just had this brilliant dream that my specialist, my gynecologist at the RAH, had came over to me and said, 'We've been able to open one of your tubes. You can try for a baby, Angela.'" And she, mum, started crying and she went, "It wasn't a dream. It was real."
Okay.
And I was just like,
okay.
What? Okay. Wow. So that's when the IVF journey started at the age of 36.
Yeah.
So I've been trying since 36. I'm 43 now. And so we tried naturally for years and years and years. Didn't work. We lost a lot of weight together, which was good. My husband and I. Physically, I've been told I'm okay. But it just didn't happen. So we went through IVF. And that was just quite horrific. I think it was a hard kind of process, with failures in those as well. We're now on, this is the first time I think it's going to be said publicly, but we're now on the adoption route.
Wow.
So
wow.
It's,
I get goosebumps. Wow.
Yeah, so
that's amazing.
It's phenomenal. We've been with St Margaret's Adoption Society in Glasgow now for about 7 months.
Mm-hmm.
So we're in the process, and I think we're going to go to the children's panel, the Scottish Adoption Panel, before summer.
Wow.
To get our
what
babies.
An exciting chapter in your life that's just
So there's that's the thing. Like, I could have easily have just not told that whole
lovely.
That whole adoption bit, and I could just stay in that negativity, but there has to be the positive, and the positive is the adoption. It's led us to the adoption, you know, and yes, going through the horribleness of not being able to take the baby yourself in your body, you know, and you know, and the failure in the IVFs as well, you know, but I know that I will be a mum, you know, so that's the positive.
You will.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
There's always going to be positives in my
life. I really
life.
Appreciate you sharing that with me.
Yeah.
And I'm so excited for you.
I know. So
it's amazing.
I can't wait.
Awesome.
And we've asked for two. So we'll take twins or siblings.
Adoption's just a wonderful thing.
Well, I've actually found out my dad is adopted. Yeah, he didn't find out until he was like 50.
Wow.
You know, so.
Wow, that's amazing.
So we've got a wee connection there with that. So that's good. You know, so we're still at the stage. We've got a wonderful social worker. Really good. She comes and checks up on us, and when we're still doing prep days and training and all this stuff and references and financials and everything, you know, but there's just a feeling of positivity of,
absolutely,
you know, there's a light at the end of the tunnel that I actually already feel like, to be honest, any of my students who's listening to this, you are my babies. Anyway, it doesn't matter even if you're 50, you're still my babies. I'm definitely a hands-on mama.
Yeah.
And, you know, I take care of them very much, and they'll message me.
Of course. Yeah.
If they wake up on gig day or show day or tour day and they're like, "I've got a pure bad sniffle," I'm like voice noting them going, "Let's do this. Let me hear you do the alphabet. Let me hear you talking. Let's see what's happening." So I'm proper hands-on. But I just feel like I'm already a parent, you know, and I'm ready to be.
I totally understand
to
that.
Be a mummy, you know.
Yeah.
So it's dead exciting just now. And
you've been brave in sharing that, you know, that the IVF journey, the videos and stuff, and then you know, if you're happy for that, the way you're shared with me, for that to go public, that's a gift to other people who are experiencing that or some way in that, their journey, whatever that looks like, like the fact that you're being open about that, and it's not, because life isn't all rainbows and sunshine, but sometimes there's
but
that,
I think
in
that
the darkness, you know,
see with the IVF, so every blog or video that I watched on Instagram or YouTube or Facebook on IVF, they were so positive.
Okay.
And all the time. And I was just like, someone must be having the same journeys me. I can't be the only one that's having real trouble with, you know, the injections.
It's the Instagram, you know, we do tend to post the highlights, and that's the issue with social media. It's great, but we need to remember that it isn't the full story. It isn't real life. We all tend to post the positive, which is fine.
Yeah.
Like, do you know what I mean? There is enough negativity in the world as it is, but in saying that, when it comes to big issues like that, not everybody's going to be going, by the way, this is really terrible. This is really hard. Yeah.
Even just having to deal with the admin side of Angela, you need to remember that you're an NHS number.
Wow, right, yeah, okay. So you're not a facial.
I'm not even an Angela. I've actually got a number.
Yeah.
The clinic would know me as. You know, knowing that we've got to pay for it as well because of our age as well. So we had to. So we had to pay for it because you're only allowed one if so up to 40, mm-hmm. up to the age of 40.
Didn't know that.
So I was just like, okay, so I was only able to get one round because I managed to go on the waiting list. When I put the videos out, I was so scared. I was physically feeling so sick because I knew how raw they were. And my husband and I sat down and he was involved in them, you know.
It's your collective company, isn't it?
And he had said, you know, what do you think? And I was, and so I'd made videos through the first time we did IVF, but didn't have the confidence to put them out. And then the second time I was like, okay, I'm going to put them out on the 1st of January. Mm-hmm. My first one, I'm going to release it on the 1st of January and start this year and try and really work on myself and build it and just let people know, because I am someone who does hi, and I'm the teacher and I want to be that positive.
Same thing. I'm your pal when it comes to that again.
You know, so people I wanted to let some people kind of actually see me as, you're so strong, you can take it, you know. And you don't actually, people like us, we do still need a cuddle every now and again. You know, if not daily, if not hourly,
knows me.
I need hugs, you know. Yeah. I need every now and again somebody to go, you're all right.
It's that, you can't pour for it. Yeah. Earlier on, I mean, you're a human being. Yeah. You get to feel all the emotions. You get to be all the people.
Yeah.
You can't just be one-dimensional is boring. Nobody is one thing.
Yeah.
And you can't be all the things for everybody else and not do it for yourself.
I know.
You need that support. You need somebody cheerleading you, championing you, being behind you, whatever that looks like. Who, it doesn't need to be a partner, it could be a parent or whoever it is, a pal, but we all need that to like somebody to hold us up, and we need to be able to be honest as well how we're feeling. Like, I feel crap today, and that's all right.
Yeah,
don't need to be Mrs. Positive all the time.
I know,
you know.
But it was a great learner for me because I put the first video out and then I went to sleep really. And I woke up and I just remember waking up, my tummy just like disappeared from me.
That you'd posted it.
And then I checked my phone, and the outpour of support was just, it was people from Miami messaging me, people from all over the world messaging and going, thank God somebody's put something out that shows raw. My experience was the same as yours. Right. Everyone feels like it's this happy. And I've got to say, and yes, you do have to stay positive during the IVF. Yeah, it's so important.
Power
of positivity, absolutely.
It's a roller coaster, I would imagine. I don't know if they're used to it, but I can imagine it's a real roller coaster. I think that's actually what you said to me when you messaged me.
I did. I said twists and turns. And you do, and I have grown up with faith, and you do question it, and you do think, you know, is it something I've done in life? Is it something I you know, should I have eaten fish more? You know what I mean? Honestly, you just think everything and anything. You know, and you realise, you know, and I always come back to, I really like Brené Brown.
I love Brené Brown.
So I'm a huge, wholeheartedly vibe
Most
fan.
Into that and there.
Right.
Yeah.
And
else.
So her Rising Strong book, so it's all about resilience, and it's all about, you know, it's not about questioning what's happened, it's about looking to your future and going, well, what can you learn from and what can you take forward with you, you know. And so every kind of scenario that I'm in, and I've had a lot of twists and turns, you know, personally and educationally and work-wise, you know, and everything. And I always kind of do the same routine of structure of I'll go home, I'll cry, I'll go introverted, and I'll go, what have I done wrong? What have I done? Oh gosh. And then there's something inside me that bounces back and goes, okay, it's happened. What can I look forward to? What can I take with me? What can I learn from this situation? And I think it's my mum in me. My mum is the strongest, resilient woman on the planet. She pretty much raised me and my sister by herself. My dad's not really the best kind of human. She's just always been someone who has allowed me to fall or fail, picked me back up, dusted my knees off, wiped my tears, gave me a cuddle and went, let's try that again.
Great. That's what a mommy should do.
Aye. And that's what spurs me on.
And you do that for your students, that's what you do.
You know.
Oh, I'm just like, it's so lovely to meet you at this point in your story.
I know.
I'm so excited to know what happens next.
I know.
It's all going to be more exciting and more twists and turns. I love it.
I know.
It's very, what a positive point in your life to be at, like, after everything you've been through.
I know.
Like, so I obviously didn't know about your, the decade of illness.
And, as you said, if you look at my social media, there's nothing really that's showing negative
it's okay. That's fine. Yeah. It's just a people into part of your life. And but I think that's why I love doing this podcast, because it's quite cathartic for people, that people come to me saying, "God, I feel actually better for just speaking about it, having the space to whether it all ends up going out publicly or not." Do you know what I mean? It's just like, this is a safe space, and I want you to know that, like, it really is. But what a privilege for me to like sit here with you. Like, we've just literally met.
I know.
You've just literally like tell me a life story, and I'm like, what? How lucky am I? Like, I genuinely feel, and that's when I started this, I couldn't even imagine how many amazing people I would have met in the streets. And I just take that on, and you use it for good.
Yeah.
You know, you then take that on and go, well, there's amazing things happen in the world, there's difficult things happen in the world. Like, you just have to approach everyone with that kindness and positive energy.
Yes.
The world is great and people are great.
They are.
We just need to knock past all the negativity. Angela, this has been an absolute privilege and joy. Thank you so much
for your time and energy.
I really appreciate it.
I don't know what I kind of expected. I don't know, but this has been really relaxing. It's been really good, and it's been quite therapeutic and releasing, which is quite nice, you know. So, because I haven't really talked about that kind of 10-year period publicly to a certain extent, I always feel like it's a real black spot against my name. I mean, but I think I'm scared in case I think people look at me and go, "Oh, she wasted her life." You know, but I don't feel like I have.
You're young. You've got a whole another life in front of you.
I know.
You do?
Yeah.
Of course you do.
Well, it's the life of children, hopefully.
Oh my God, that's exciting. I'm buzzing for you.
I know. I can't believe it.
Buzzing for you. I just wish you all the joy. Just
I know.
Take it all. Take it all. It's amazing.
Yeah.
I have to ask you, because I ask everybody, because it's called The Bra and the Brave.
Yeah.
And this is just your answer now, today. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to hold you to it forever.
Yeah.
What would be your favourite Scots word or phrase?
I know it's a wee bit naughty, but I quite like your pure tit. I hear it a lot when I'm walking about in the streets. I just hear, like, it's usually guys to other guys going, "Don't be such a pure tit," although sometimes it's an F tit, but I quite like that, but it's quite a funny one.
I think we're the only people that use that, pure this and pure that.
I always remember minging.
Yes,
remember minging.
I like all the ones that like that, minging and bowfing and howling and walk it. They're all my favourites.
Duke it. You know,
from your Burns competition days.
I love the
yes.
sound.
Yes.
It's a great sound.
We take that for granted that we can
be. A lot of my students can't. No, and a lot of the students can't roll their R's either, and it's not because of the tongue tie underneath the tongue either. It's just it's not taught.
Well,
I know.
I'll be getting my whatever I get again. You said I have to get some
salt lamp.
Salt lamp. I'm on it.
Salt lamp's
I'll
a good one.
I'll be singing like I'm.
Yeah. It'll also siren. Stop any snoring if there is any snoring in the house. Don't know.
I don't know. Did you ask the other half?
Just watch. The cat will scratch at it.
Oh.
She will. Most. That's what I've heard. Why? Most cats will actually scratch at it because they like it. It's like a kind of it kind of cleans their nails or something.
Thank you.
And they quite like it, so just so I'd put it up a wee bit.
Right, okay.
You know, if you
I'm
can.
All over it. Yeah. Thanks. No, this has been a joy. I can't thank you enough.
No, thank you very much for having me. First one, you know. So
that's it. You know, you can go and do a million podcasts and an expert. But I'm glad you came on my first time.
I know.
I hope you enjoyed today's episode of The Bra and the Brave. Podcast about people and their passions. Join us next time for more insight and inspiration from my wonderful guests. Bye for now.